today in the Team Challenge Series. A slam match between Big Yukon John and 475-pound Coquina Maximus. The only way to win is to slam your opponent.
From Television City in Hollywood,
this podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Discretionary viewer participation is advised for the following professional wrestling exhibition.
Greetings from Allentown as taped in front of a live studio audience.
AWA Championship Wrestling. The AWA presents the greatest stars in professional wrestling, bringing you the best in mat action.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 114 of Greetings from Allentown. I am your host, Peter Winson. And with great trepidation, once again, I'm returning to the AWA, this time for the year 1990, AWA All-Star Wrestling from January 6, 1990. I say with great trepidation because that promotion has a bit of a reputation once you cross a certain line. I think that line may be defined by an episode I did earlier where the Battle Royal decided the world title in February of 1989. Go check that out in the archives. I can't remember what episode it was at this point. It doesn't really matter. I mean, I had to cheat on the theme song a little bit because at this point, you can't really get a clean copy of it because it's Lee Marshall blabbering about the Team Challenge series, for which I'll have a few things to say about that, just as everyone else does. But before I get into all that, let me get in my plugs. You can email the show, greetingsfromallentown@gmail.com, facebook.com/greetingsfromallentown. Give me a follow on Twitter, @GFAllentownPod. That is @GFAllentownPod, and you may be listening to the show on the Pro Wrestling Only feed. More on Pro Wrestling Only and all you can find there in just a little bit later in the show. Now, as for Twitter, all I can think of, especially over the last week, is friend of the show, Richard Land's account, which is @MaskedWrestlers. And if you're not following that, then I don't know what the hell you're doing with your life, because he has been posting these blooper outtake clips from 1984 of Gene Okerlund, Kamala, and many others. Especially the Kamala ones I will never get enough of because of the whole character, just seeing that character actually talk with him and the whole getup. I mean, I've obviously heard him talk on the Steve Austin show and elsewhere, but it's just so hilarious, and it proves that Gene Okerlund, I mean, the fact that he would stand there for hours and was still able to maintain, like, that level of comedy doing it, it's probably the only way you could get through it, but it's actually funny. I have no idea why WWE Network doesn't put together, like, a three-hour clip show of this. People complain about the length of WrestleMania. Even though, like I said a few weeks ago, you know what you're getting into. But if they were to take these clips of Gene and Kamala and the Iron Sheik and Howard Finkel horsing around and just strung them together for 7.5 hours, I don't think anybody would complain that it was too long, because you'd just be laughing your ass off that entire time. Especially in this era where states have legalized grass, you know, especially here in Massachusetts, I think this is something that could help people get through the day. And just saying, for, you know, a potential public service announcement. And also, it is something, it's nice to see something different for once, because my weekend this past, all it does is rain up here in New England. I don't know when the hell the Boston area became Seattle, but all it does is not like torrential downpours every day, but it freaking drizzles every day to the point where I can't cut the grass in my yard anytime because there's never a freaking dry day. So I could go through with the lawnmower, but then you get the grass sticking underneath the lawnmower, and then you got to clean it out, and then you get that weird, like almost cement-like thing that's green underneath, and I don't particularly care for it. All I'm doing, I go into hockey games, a game 5 this past Saturday, a very exciting one on the National Broadcasting Company, in the third period with 6 goals, 3 aside. I can't really talk too much about that because as I speak, that series is over And as I sit here right now, I have no idea which way it is going to go. So watch my mood change as this episode goes along, although some of that might be the in-ring action of the AWA from early 1990. I'm just sick of this freaking rain so much. So I've been inside watching a lot of TV, like that HBO show that is ending very, very soon. On the show, you have all these battles leading up to this grand conclusion. You don't know exactly where it's going to go. By which, I am talking about the television show Veep on HBO, which when it actually ends this coming Sunday, I'm probably going to be canceling HBO. I guess the second the John Oliver show is over, although I don't like that show as much now because the long segment that he's been doing, I just don't give a crap about the stuff that he's doing, especially that stupid, like, Japanese cartoon character that's supposed to resemble John Oliver. It's like, I don't care. And it really wasn't even that funny. So I just needed to get that on the record. And hey, speaking of which, I did a podcast the other day with JT Rosero of Place to Be Nation that should serve as something of a retrospective of the television show Veep. So check that out on the Place to Be Nation pop feed. Did I say that correctly? Because I'm not like Chad Campbell. I don't get to say that all the time. The other thing for my weekend that really bothered me, and this will speak to the people who are computer oriented out there, because this is something I don't like to think about all that much because I'm not all that great with computers, is the Firefox issue where Mozilla deleted all the add-ons because they let certificates expire. I don't like to think about what browser I'm using just so long as it's not Internet Explorer or not Edge, which for some reason pops up at work. By the way, I didn't get fired last week. I forgot to tie up that loose end during the show. Yeah, I actually did get extended to June 30th. But anyway, so I like to use Firefox for years and years, even though sometimes all the add-ons can actually make it a little bit slow to run. But it's always been good to me. And then all of a sudden the add-ons are gone, and then I became afraid to use it on Saturday morning because, like, how can I trust what's going on here? This is the type of thing that kills a company like that. Like, how can I go back and use Firefox after they let something like this happen? I mean, granted, I started using Google Chrome, but I know that the exact same thing could happen to them at some point. And there's a definite business lesson here with this Firefox thing where people will turn away from it. Remember when Netscape was the big browser back in the day? Now, part of that was because they got aced out with Internet Explorer being preloaded on all computers and integrated, and you had to use that for certain stuff. So they had an institutional advantage. But this is kind of like if you go to a restaurant and you end up getting sick there, or if there's an outbreak of something, like when all those Boston College kids got sick from eating Chipotle in Cleveland Circle in Boston several years ago, which I'll admit was pretty hilarious that a bunch of BC kids got sick like that, being a BU guy, but it doesn't really make me want to go to Chipotle, especially that location, which I think may have closed at some point. Speaking of food, I did smoke a pork shoulder on Sunday this past weekend, which means that I'm stuck at home for much of the 9 hours that it took to smoke the, I think it was 6.8 pound pork shoulder. I go at a little bit higher temperature than others might because I want to get the smoke going quickly at the beginning. It came out pretty good, except I want to trim more of the skin off of it next time, except I think that this particular pork shoulder had way too much skin on it relative to ones that I've made in the past. Probably done this like 8 times before. Used hickory wood on this one. I used the entire bag because I went through about 6 or 7 rounds of smoke. So the good thing about that is you get yourself fed for like three meals over the course of the week. So it's kind of like, you know, making like a giant pot of pasta, except it's pretty versatile with pork. You know, you can have tacos, you can have sandwiches, you can do a lot of things with it. And there are lots of bottles of barbecue sauce that I have to use up at some point. There is one more piece from the weekend that I have to bring up, and this kind of ties back to wrestling with regards to the Kentucky Derby this past Saturday. Because in all the years, 145 years or whatever it's been of the Kentucky Derby, they had never once booked a dusty finish to the event. A literal dusty finish where a horse wins the race and then is disqualified afterwards, as Maximum Security was. And had I bet on the race, I would have bet on Maximum Security. So needless to say, I would have been pretty pissed off the same way fans were with Dusty Rhodes wins at Starrcade 85 and then it gets reversed all the other times, such as in the AWA when Hulk Hogan wins the title at Super Sunday in 1983 and then all of a sudden it gets reversed. Or, oh, he threw him over the top rope, and how the AWA would do that on every single show. So kind of transitioning smoothly into this, the AWA in early 1990, obviously things are not going well, as evidenced by the lack of star power on this show. I mean, there are some things to see, at least in the advertisement at the beginning of it. We're going to see a body slam match, which certainly brings to mind WrestleMania 1 and Big John Studd and Andre the Giant. And you know, this won't necessarily have the spectacle of somebody throwing the money like Andre did and Heenan going in and grabbing it, but the people involved, it's rather interesting, as Yukon John Nord, our future Berserker, taking on Kokina Maximus, who is the future Yokozuna. So this is something where I actually watched the beginning of this video many, many months ago, and I said to myself, oh, young Yokozuna, I definitely have to cover that. Larry Zbysko is on the show because he is the world champion and has been for almost a year, dating back to that battle royal that I covered in the previous episode. But he is going to be challenged for that belt very soon by my man, Mr. Saito, who's also on this show. We get the debut of a tag team, Brute Force, which probably means nothing to anybody, because if you asked a normal wrestling fan on the street, and by normal, I mean not watching AWA 1989, 1990, I would say 0.5% would be able to correctly identify the two guys in that team. It's Ricky Rice and Dave Casper, but not the Dave Casper who was a football player. And then there's a bunch of other guys. Who cares, really, because this promotion is so far gone at this point. But sometimes, when things are so far gone, you're willing to try things like, oh, I don't know, the Team Challenge Series, which AWA became infamous for in 1989 and 90. A thing where you have three captains, Baron Von Raschke, Sergeant Slaughter, and Larry Zbysko, captaining these teams that don't really make a whole lot of sense because it's completely fluid, because, you know, people would leave, people would come in. None of it really seemed particularly organized. But at the age of 10, when I learned about this, reading the magazines, because I was not watching the ESPN show regularly, just like everybody else back then, I thought that this was an amazing idea at first. Because, first of all, I'm a 10-year-old who didn't know how to book then. I still don't know how to book now. And I'm like, oh my God, they're going to do it like the NHL or the NBA, where you can look at the standings and you can kind of follow a team. So you can root for Sergeant Slaughter's team or something like that. But unfortunately, they would throw in things to kind of make it not make sense at all. I mean, there's a time where I think something, yes, I'm actually defending the Team Challenge Series on the grounds that that's something that could work if you did it in a specific amount of time and it wasn't as open-ended as this, because it really seemed like there was no end game to all of it. They would promise like this big thing at the end, but if you just keep pushing it out. But I'm thinking back to the WWF of 1997 and the gang wars. I feel like you could do something with like those teams or something like that. If you have a bunch of factions fighting each other, you could just contain the factions within this one league and have it be like that. Unfortunately, though, this isn't sports. It's sports entertainment, as Vince McMahon. So following it via the standings, it's not exactly the same. You're telling a story. We're telling stories, pal. So I guess maybe it was destined to fail in my dreams of this being like something you could follow in the newspaper via standings. Didn't really make a whole lot of sense, but it's the AWA. I mean, what can you do? I mean, these are the people who did that serial thing that was released on the WWE Network a couple months ago for Kellogg's or Special K, whatever the hell it was. It was hilarious because some of the guys actually got to show some personality for a change. It's nice to see Mike Enos kind of break out and be himself. Before I get into the show proper, there's another thing about 1990 AWA that interests me, and that is the announce team. And I'm not talking about Eric Bischoff. He's definitely there conducting all the interviews in sort of the Mean Gene Okerlund role. I'm talking about the guy on play-by-play and not necessarily color, because that's Greg Gagne, and he's, you know, pretty much comatose during all of this. Our play-by-play man for this program is ringside Ralph Stranges, who, for a wrestling fan who may not follow American sports, like, okay, this is the guy who hosted the AWA at the end. Oh my God, what a joke. But this guy had a very interesting career in broadcasting because he survived doing AWA, just the same as Eric Bischoff, but he did not go and announce in other wrestling promotions or any of that. He would actually go on and audition to be the Minnesota North Stars color commentator, a long shot for that role. He actually got it later in 1990 and was the color guy for 3 years in Minnesota before the team moved to Dallas, which is another one of those things that seems insane that a hockey team left Minnesota to move to Texas. But yeah, that actually happened. There's a whole variety of reasons why that went down. So the guy who was doing play-by-play at the time didn't want to move to Texas, so Stranges moved to Texas and he served as the play-by-play man starting in 1996, he was color guy for three more years, through the year 2015 when he left that position. And he was so popular in Dallas that his team with Daryl Razor Ray, so his color guy had a kind of gimmick nickname, their broadcasts would actually be simulcast on the radio as well as television, something very unusual, at least in a bigger market like Dallas. Sometimes in smaller cities, they would do that to just save money. Stranges actually is a motivational speaker now since leaving the Stars. I guess he addresses stuff like his alcoholism, struggled with addiction, and all that sort of stuff. So he has a very interesting story. And as if that's enough, he's got one more thing that's going to catch my attention immediately. And this goes all the way back to when he was a very young man. In 1984, he appeared as a contestant on the game show, one that I very much enjoyed, Pressure Luck, hosted by the great Peter Tamarkin. And he actually won about $7,000 in prizes on that show, and so he made two appearances. And to answer your question, hell yeah, I pulled the clip of him on Pressure Luck because it's far more interesting than most guys in the AWA.
Meet Ralph Stranges.
How are you, Ralph?
Close, Peter, close.
Stranges. Pretty close.
Pretty close, but no cigar
for me.
Ralph. I'll just call you Ralph and forget the last
That's
name.
Fine.
How's that?
That's fine. That's fine.
Where are you from, Ralph?
I'm from originally Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55418. Here I am in California.
55418, that's
well,
the zip?
Well, yeah, they geographically mark it off that way. So back in Minneapolis, that was a real good way to identify where I was from. But now I'm in L.A., and 90068 seems to be.
Much hipper, Ralph.
Yes, the much
hipper. Good to have you with us. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Peter.
Now, for those of you who don't remember Pressure Luck, which probably means you're under the age of 30 or 35 at this point, this was a game where you'd have a big board. They would answer trivia questions at the beginning to get spins. And then when they would spin, it would show, like, the big board, it would light up, and you'd buzz in, and it could land on $500, it could land on trips to various places, or it could land on the infamous whammy, which Ralph got at one point during the show.
Stop!
Stop at luggage. Value of that luggage. Ralph is $385, three spins, third
We're
place.
Going.
Here
We're
he
goes. Let's go. Big bucks, lots of money. Stop!
Stop at O.
And yes, when you would get a whammy, the little cartoon whammy would dance across the screen and they would play a little song like you heard Billie Jean there. So, if I could have been on any game show in history, Pressure Luck definitely would have been near the top. I would say I would want to be on after that guy beat the game when he memorized the patterns. That was back in 1983, so Ralph was on after that. But this is far more interesting than pretty much anybody on this show. And I know Larry Zbysko is there, so we're going to have an episode of According to Larry. And hopefully we'll have that slam match between Coquina Maximus and Yukon John. I mean, God knows, going through, they're pumping this up enough. They're getting us ready for it. So this is episode 114, so I'm going to kick it off with looking back at a sports moment from the year 2014.
And they're into the stretch. It's General A-Rod, Totalist. Here's California Chrome on the far outside, and he's a furlong from immortality. He is up on the outside of Commissioner. Here's Wicked Strong in the center of the track. Commissioner, California Chrome on the outside. Totalist, Commissioner, it won't be a triple crown this year. It's going to be close. It's going to be very close. And Totalist got there. Totalist has won the Belmont Stakes.
Might be a bit strange that I played the finish to the Belmont Stakes from 2014, but it is something that is very special to me because I made more money betting on that race than any other race, whether it be Greyhound, Thoroughbred, Quarter Horse, Cats, whatever. Okay, I made so much money on that race because I hit with Tonalist. I think I hit the Exacta. I don't think I bet the Trifecta because I usually just sort of give up on those. But yeah, I made myself a lot of money, so that has a very special place in my heart. It's kind of following my strategy. California Chrome was going for the Triple Crown, and we had yet to see a Triple Crown winner since 1978 at that point. My strategy for the Belmont Stakes would always be to turn on the horse that won the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, not unlike Seth Rollins hitting Roman Reigns with a chair, which occurred only a couple of weeks before this. So yeah, so won a lot of money, and it's a good thing too, because some clod rear-ended me in a poorly designed construction zone a couple days after this, and I ended up having to buy a new car, which, you know, I got an insurance payment, but it was nice to have that money from the Belmont Stakes. So anyway, we go into our first match, but first, they actually promote again the slam match coming up between Coquina Maximus and Yukon John, and I can't wait for it because they will not stop talking about it. I cannot wait to see this match. But up first, we have the illustrious Johnny Stewart taking on, I just wrote a bunch of question marks, but I found out later in the match that it happened to be Red Tyler. There's really not any good websites that kept results of these shows. There is a listing, but it doesn't list this particular match, which is why I didn't seem to know. Now, I was a little worried that I wasn't going to get something on the illustrious Johnny Stewart, or John Stewart, as he's known in some circles. Yes, it does sow confusion, so when I look him up, I get a lot of Daily Show hits and stuff like that. But this is a rather interesting fellow, as it turns out, because he went on to become a car salesman in his post-wrestling career. But he did other things, too, such as co-found the relaunch of the AWA with Dale Gagne, and yeah, that's Dale Gagner, so G-A-G-N-E-R. I think it would be pronounced Gagne, because I know that there's a hockey player where it's pronounced that way. And I know that there was an AWA copyright issue with those guys. He ended up winning the rebooted AWA title in 1996, so when you look at his bio, it's like, who winning the AWA title in 1996? What the hell does that mean? Eventually, due to the copyright issue, that promotion would change its name to Wrestling Superstars Live, which is probably a good idea, because I don't think they were going to... WWE had acquired the intellectual property of the American Wrestling Association at that point. They did look into calling themselves the American Wrestling something else that also stood for AWA, but I guess that didn't pass muster in the courts. But this John Stewart fella, the illustrious one, is interesting for another reason, and I am fascinated with pro wrestlers who go on to run for public office. I believe Butcher Vachon did as well. There's been a handful of guys that I've covered in the course of Greetings from Allentown. Maybe nobody as interesting as John, the illustrious one, Stewart. And there's an article from a couple of years ago, because believe it or not, he ran for governor of Illinois in 2018 as a libertarian, and he finished third in the primary. Now, I'll grant you that there were only three people in the Libertarian primary, and I believe in Libertarian Party politics, it is actually a stripping contest. So you'd think somebody who was a pro wrestler would have done a little bit better at that. I'm not sure. So obviously his political beliefs are a little bit different. I mean, I've voted for Libertarian candidates, not all of the time, but fairly frequently. So this article on him is rather interesting. For it, he says, the state is run by a hierarchy, a Ponzi scheme of politicians where the bottom people on the Ponzi scheme, we the voters, are going to lose the most. He said he has heard a consistent message of disgust with both major parties from Illinois voters. And yeah, Illinois has a state, quite a bit of scandals. Stewart said he was Kellyanne Conway's first political client when he ran as a Republican for the State House in 1997. In 1999, he ran again as a Republican in a contentious 11-person primary for Congress, which was eventually won by now former U.S. Senator Mark Kirk. So he fell out of favor, I guess, with the Republican Party somewhere along the line, but he ran for Congress in 2009 trying to get the seat vacated by Rahm Emanuel when he became Barack Obama's chief of staff. He got 368 votes and finished in sixth place out of six candidates. So you think, okay, maybe he should give up on politics. But as a wrestler, Stewart's persona, so they go into his background, was that of an evil corporate raider, he said. Now, I wasn't getting that from what this character was. It just sort of seemed like a spoiled rich guy or something like that. After retiring from wrestling in 2008, Stewart became president of a car dealership in Chicago's Northwest Side, Norwood Park neighborhood, started by his father 33 years ago. Stewart said people are disgusted with a political system that has left Illinois headed for bankruptcy and businesses fleeing the state. And yes, it is kind of a big problem. He says there's unsavory characters in both politics and wrestling, Stewart said, describing the two as similar pursuits with different costumes. In wrestling, he has, quote, actually met more upstanding people that I could trust and honor their word than in politics. But yet he keeps returning to politics and kept trying to run for office, as he did in 2018. Your state is going bankrupt. You've been lied to. Take your head out of the sand. It's time to face facts. Stewart said he voted for Donald Trump in 2016, which could prove controversial among fellow libertarians whose votes he will need at the party's convention. So this article is in the lead-up to him finishing third. I don't know why they're irritated with me, Stewart said. I don't know why the libertarians in Illinois are not mad at Gary Johnson. And he goes into the whole jag about Gary Johnson getting confused over the siege of Aleppo and all that sort of stuff. I don't know. I have mentioned before that I voted for Gary Johnson for president in both 2012 and 2016. I mean, look at our current president in terms of things that he's said that he's definitely gotten wrong. So I'm not going to let one slip up over Aleppo where he clearly just sort of screwed up. I mean, to me, it's just one of those gotcha things, and I really don't care. Now, I've been talking about him and his political career, but it is much more interesting than what is going on in this match. Let me assure you. I mean, I was terrified I was going to have to actually talk about what he was doing. He's working a loaded knee pad gimmick. I mean, who cares? I mean, it's the AWA in 1990. Do whatever the hell you want. A slam, a forearm drop. He then hits a drop kick, which, I don't know, I see that as more of a babyface move, but maybe that's just trying to impress Vern still because he's Mr. Dropkick from that wrestler movie. But then Stewart yells at the crowd, give me Rob Lowe. And I'm thinking, I don't know what he's getting at there, but if he was referring to Rob Lowe's tryst with an underage girl, I would have expected Buck Zumhoff to be the one yelling that. A power slam off an Irish whip gets three Ted DiBiase's out of 10, so not completely terrible, but not great. And he goes for the pin with a foot, but then just kind of lets the guy roll off. I don't understand what the purpose of that was. And then he adjusts his knee pad again to load it up, but his corner whip gets reversed. And then he hits a clothesline out of the corner, and then off another whip, he hits a knee to the stomach of Red Tyler, sort of like a cross body where he just sort of dives into him but hits him with the knee. And that is how he picks up the win with that move, and he tosses Tyler out of the ring. And this was pretty terrible. I mean, like I said, it wasn't even listed on the docket for this particular show. However, I must note that the back of his trunks says spoiled rotten, and it's in the same cursive writing as you would see the Paul Orndorff Mr. Number Wonderful. So I think he got it from the same store where Paul Orndorff got his gear.
Starting back up with it now is Martinez in a 3-on-2. Clifford gave it across. It's held in a shot. Safe. Rebound. Score. The Stanley Cup. Martinez.
Done some revisiting of the 2014 NHL playoffs when I was bored at work one day, and the Rangers were a lot closer to the Kings, despite losing in five games, because I think three of those games were in overtime. I still kind of, you know, the Rangers made it to the final that year because Carey Price got injured on a controversial play in the conference final. The Bruins losing to the Canadiens in the round before that. I think the Bruins would have handled the Rangers because I thought that was a good matchup for them. But also in that 2014 playoffs, one of the greatest playoff series of all time was between Chicago and Los Angeles in the conference final. LA won Game 7 in overtime, the same night as WWE Payback was being played uptown at the Allstate Arena at the United Center. That game went into overtime, and Alec Martinez won that game as well with a Game 7 goal. Alec Martinez winning the Stanley Cup with a goal in the second overtime. And I just want to say, you can hear on that clip the crowd chanting, "We want the cup, we want the cup." And I hate that chant at playoff games that I go to unless it is in the final and the cup is maybe about to be won. So kudos to the Kings fans for a perfectly timed, the only acceptable, "We want the cup" chant. Unless, of course, you know, your team has won the cup already and you're waiting for Gary Bettman to come out with it so you can boo him and all that. And speaking of a very booable figure, we have Uncle Eric Bischoff, who is definitely graying here in 1990 somehow. Apparently didn't have enough money for the hair dye, you know, making money selling meat out of a truck, as Hulk Hogan put it. Of course, he always just reminds me of John Davidson from That's Incredible from back in the day. But he's got UConn John Nord with him. And did I mention earlier that he has a bout coming up against the Futures Yokozuna, Kokina Maximus, in a body slam match? Well, I'm going to tell you that again, that it is a body slam match against Kokina Maximus coming up. That's going to be the main event of this show. Now, UConn John Nord is a bit of like a lumberjack gimmick, as you might expect. Nord helpfully explains how his work as a lumberjack will help him in this upcoming bout.
He's the biggest man in professional wrestling. Kokina, listen, I tell you what, I don't weigh 475 pounds, but I've lifted up 600, 700, 800,000 pound logs. I've been up north and I've been training. Kokina, you bring your blubber to the ring, and me and Bertha are going to meet you there, and I'm going to pick you up and slam you. 1, 2, 3.
Boy, I can't wait for this match, because I've always kind of liked John Nord and Kokina Maximus. It's going to be very interesting to see Yokozuna before he just got really fat in the WWF, back when he could really still move around. But first, we have Larry Zbysko, who comes out to Simply the Best by Tina Turner as his theme song. I don't know why that makes me laugh so much. He's taking on Todd Becker, a man with a record of 0-32 lifetime on Cage Match, which only puts him one game behind Hugh Jackson's coaching record from the 2017 and 2018 seasons leading the Cleveland Browns. Todd Becker, it occurred to me, and just looking at this name, and I knew it was familiar because you've seen him on WWF shows as well all through the 90s. I never watched Becker, and Ted Danson is one of those guys where he's been in a lot of different shows between that, Cheers, now The Good Place, where he is outstanding, and I just got to the end of the first season of that show, and I cannot wait to watch the two remaining seasons on Netflix. But I never watched Becker, and I have no idea if that's actually any good. Apparently, it's a doctor show where he's all, you know, neurotic and stuff. I don't know. When it comes to doctor shows, I'm fine with the Mindy Project. I really liked that show several years ago, and then it went to Hulu, and I mean, it may as well have not existed at that point. I kind of compare Ted Danson a little bit with Julie Louis-Dreyfus in terms of the various characters that they had. Because Julie Louis-Dreyfus had Elaine from Seinfeld, And then The New Adventures of Old Christine, which is pretty underrated, and it's that middle show, kind of in the Becker slot for her. And then, of course, Veep, where she is outstanding as Selina Meyer. But let's not lose track of who's the star here. And that is, of course, Larry Zbysko, the champ since the Battle Royal back, episode 78 in the archives, as I mentioned earlier, where he prevailed. And he is taking his time here. What a shock.
I see Zbysko just taking his time and putting away quick.
And he is taking his time now, even getting into the match. He likes it that way. He's setting the tone.
If you can take your time and put away a guy quick.
Well, he's taking his time now. He really is.
And I think Ralph and Greg are themselves stalling for time, as Larry is stalling as well. I mean, if you ever want to be a baseball announcer on the radio, especially during a rain delay, you got to learn how to do that. I mean, hell, God knows I do that enough during this show. I mean, I just spent 5 minutes talking about Ted Danson because the dude's name was Becker. So after 50 full seconds of stalling, we get a waistlock takedown and then a clean break by Larry Z. Kind of interesting to see that. And then an offer of a handshake where nothing happens. It's not like Becker shakes his hand and then Larry does something. Because Larry then executes a single leg takedown when Becker kind of had his guard down for a second. And Ralph Strangis, he kind of makes a comparison of Larry Zbysko to a very famous Hall of Fame caliber athlete.
As Ken Dryden, the former Montreal Canadian goaltender, would say, if you're patient, you wait long enough, they'll shoot the puck right into your glove. Don't even have to move. That's Zbysko's strategy. I'll just wait. I'll wait. And then I'll deliver.
It's actually a very apt comparison because there's another similarity between Ken Dryden, famous Montreal Canadiens goaltender of the 1970s and then a future gadfly in Canadian political life, and Larry Zbysko, because both have extremely elevated opinions of themselves and, you know, can't wait to tell you how much greater and smarter they are than you, especially Dryden. Oh, yeah, we always knew we were going to eat the Bruins. You fucking had Larry Robinson on your team the entire time. Shut the hell up. I don't want to hear it from you. So backbreaker by Larry, who then pulls the guy up at two, which usually that cracks me up. Even I even laugh when Dino Bravo did that, but it's not very amusing to me right now because this is Larry Zbysko we're talking about, and vertical suplex, which, by the way, was his finisher back in 1980 at the time of the Bruno turn, but once again, he pulls Becker up at the count of two. I mean, I just want this thing to end. I mean, can't you tell that I'm not very interested in the actual wrestling on this week's show? This is a test of the human spirit, watching AWA 1990. I mean, I dare you to go on and just pull any video. I mean, I just chose the one from the beginning of the year because I thought, well, I really can't wait to see that Coquina Maximus versus Yukon John match, but also maybe because it's closer to the 80s than all the other shows, maybe it'll be a little bit better. Anyway, Larry finishes it off with a pile driver to get the 1-2-3, and he is off immediately to the interview area with Uncle Eric, and we got a WCW 1998 hoedown, or Starrcade 97, as it were.
Heavyweight champion of the world making quick work of Todd Becker.
Another example in the lives of the young and the useless.
Far be it from me to tell Larry Zbysko to slow down, but that is not the name of the show, The Young and the Useless. The name of the show, of course, is According to Larry. And for those of you who are newer to Greetings from Allentown, such Larry Zbysko interview segments are called that in tribute to the 2000s television program that aired on ABC, According to Jim. The reason being is that Jim Belushi, both facially and in sort of annoyingness, kind of reminds me of Larry Zbysko in a lot of different ways. Although I have to say that Jim Belushi had Courtney Thorne Smith on According to Jim, while Larry Zbysko only had Baby Doll. And I'm sorry, I'm kind of weighing the I'm gonna go with Courtney Thorne Smith on that one. But on today's edition of According to Larry, in kind of a surprising twist, Larry speaks out in favor of environmentalism and our nation's forests.
Oh, baby. Forget about all that. Don't lie to me. Let's talk about Coquina Maximus and Yukon John North. Here's this moron that was out here cutting down some trees wrecking all the national forests that we have left. Now he thinks he's going to come in and slam 470-some pounds of coquina. Well, you know something, Nord? You are nuts. You are goofy. You are just a spudhead from the great Northwest Woods.
He's a big man with big arms.
Big man, big arms. This is 1990. Until 1999, which is 666 upside down. So that sort of means from now till the end of time itself. No matter what kind of plot this Sergeant Slaughter comes up with, this defector Nikita Koloff. Did you see what happened with Saito? Now Saito wants a shot at the heavyweight champion of the world. And he was supposed to be my
Big John North Coquina Matthews is coming up in this slam match. The main event. We'll be back right after this.
Of the heavyweight champion of the world, Larry Zbyszko.
Wow, that escalated quickly. Kind of unraveled on Larry Z. Interesting to hear that he's something of an environmentalist and very concerned about our national parks and forests. They're great places to visit, I must say. Especially Rocky Mountain National Park. I do recommend that you head out there at some point if you ever get the chance. Mentioning 1999 when he's standing there with Eric Bischoff. It's like, hey, you two guys are still going to be together by then. And well, one of you is going to get fired that year. I don't know how long Larry Zbyszko hung on in WCW. It really doesn't matter because once you get past a certain point in that promotion, I just don't care anymore. So there's an ad for, and I can't believe that this is something that actually existed at that point in time, an AWA hotline that had, well, I'll just play the thing.
Feel to have millions and millions of dollars and not be able to spend it. Well, our butthead of the week found out. Who is it? You call me now.
Hi, I'm Donna, and if you want to find out which AWA star is destined to become the next Bo Jackson, pick up the phone and call me now.
Hi, I'm Greg Gagne, and the AWA wants to know who your favorite wrestler was of 1989. Call me now and bolt.
Christmas has passed, but Scrooge still lives. If you'd like to know who Scrooge is, call me, Matt Burns, now. You fans talk and the AWA listen. You're going to get a mixed tag team match right here on All Star Wrestling in 2 weeks. Now, promoters have an opportunity to sign a taped fist match between Sergeant Slaughter and the Russian Brute. You tell us, should they sign it? Do you want to see it? Call the fan line now and let us know.
But what if they called in and said, no, we don't want to see that? Then what would you do? Anyway, Larry Zbyszko, definitely the most natural person to have a 900 hotline because the whole thing is charging by the minute. And who better than Larry Zbyszko to just stall and keep you on the line for as long as humanly possible, keep you paying that 99 cents a minute? I don't know. I'm surprised WCW didn't do more of that with him later on. So into our next match, which involves four people who I know very little about, the Menace and the Tokyo Bullet, which apparently this is not Bob Armstrong's son. I was hoping it was going to be something like that. Taking on the newly formed team of Brute Force, no relation to Strike Force, of Dave Casper and Ricky Rice. And as I said earlier, this is not the Dave Casper who played for the Oakland Raiders in the 70s, the ghost to the post catch in the 1977 playoffs against the Baltimore Colts in overtime, or actually to force overtime in that game that they eventually won. Or the Holy Roller play in 1978, in which he batted the ball forward so that the Raiders could score a touchdown and then win 21-20 against the San Diego Chargers. If you've ever wondered why, when you watch American football, why there is a 2-minute warning in each half, it is because of that play and the Oakland Raiders kind of batting the ball forward, where the rule now is you can't bat the ball forward in the last 2 minutes unless the person who actually fumbles it recovers it. Again, much more interesting to me than what is going on in this match. And Casper is a pretty well-built guy, but he's a little bit short. Rice is a little bit taller. And Ricky Rice owns the distinction of winning the first Team Challenge Series match. Please pardon me as I stifle my laughter. He was playing the unknown soldier and defeated Mike Enos, who definitely is a sort of Forrest Gump character in wrestling history when you think about it. He's in the first Team Challenge Series match. He's in the ring when Scott Hall shows up on Nitro. I'm sure that there's a whole host of other things. I know where you could go for discussion on such topics like Mike Enos. ProWrestlingOnly.com, where you can explore other podcasts, such as the Bigfoot Pro Wrestling podcast, which debuted earlier this week on the feed, along with match reviews past, you know, Mike Enos and the Beverly Brothers and the Destruction Crew and all that. Features such as Walking in Memphis and retrospectives, which I guess that would fall under retrospectives as well of the Memphis territory. Reviews of wrestling books, video games, matches, playlists, wrestler appearances in non-wrestling TV shows, movies, and more. Join the conversation by signing up at the Pro Wrestling Only forums. Why do I always say shining up? At the pro wrestling, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I really am regressing week after week. Anyway, online for over a decade, over 2,000 registered members with a hell of a lot of threads. The message board is a vibrant community, whether you were talking about a specific match in the match discussion archive, take a deep dive in microscope form, or discuss more general topics from wrestling's past and present. Check all of that out and more at ProWrestlingOnly.com.
And today in our Team Challenge main event, it's Big UConn John against 475-pound Coquina Maximus, managed by Sheik Adnan LKC. It should be a dandy. Stay tuned for that one.
I will stay tuned, Greg. That's why I'm here, to see Coquina Maximus versus UConn John Nord in a body slam match. That is the only reason why I am watching this show. So I am definitely going to stick around until the end as we get the bullet running into Casper and then kind of hits him with an O'Connor roll, who then kicks out and the bullet goes flying out of the ring. Casper then runs into a foot in the corner as the Menace comes in, but Casper then rolls away, just kind of does like a big shoulder roll to the other side to tag in Ricky Rice, who comes in off the top. And then he goes into both. I was very confused here. There didn't appear to be much of a tag on the heel side. But then Rice does the hip lock move after he flips around to kind of gain more leverage on it, where he puts the foot up on the shoulder. The Marty Jannetty thing that you would often see him do. But it's interesting to see Ricky Rice doing it. So he's trying to, you know, make it so that there's something else on this show for me to watch. Casper comes in off the second rope, double axe. They start working the left arm because that's the way things are done in the American Wrestling Association. And unfortunately, we get some terrible, tragic news from Ralph Strangis.
And we have just received word for that Team Challenge match coming later on that Coquina Maximus has not yet made it to the building. We'll check on that and update you as the match progresses, but boy, that's a bombshell.
Oh no, they have to be screwing with us. I mean, Coquina is definitely going to get there. I mean, they've promoted this match on multiple occasions leading up to this point. We're only 16 and a half minutes into the video. Clearly he's going to get, you know what? I think he's a little heavy. He's probably off having dinner, and you know, he's not as fast as he once was, even back in 1988. So I don't know. It's probably something like that. A slam by the Menace, but Casper manages to hold on. This guy's not terrible either. So am I finding myself liking the team of Brute Force? Is this just kind of like the reality of the AWA in 1990, kind of like living in a shack in Haiti with like dirt floors and no roof or anything, and that's your reality? So what's good might not be as good if, you know, say you lived in the middle of Manhattan or whatever. Bullet scores with a drop kick, and what is with heels doing drop kicks in this promotion at this time? It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know. It's just the way I have it in my head. Elbow gets a two count, but then a double Irish whip by the Bullet and the Menace, and duck underneath, and a clothesline of both of them, and the lukewarm tag by Casper to Ricky Rice, who heats it up in a hurry because Ricky Rice comes in and he hits two drop kicks on the Menace and the Tokyo Bullet. And holy crap! Some good stuff actually evokes a comparison to Jim Brunzel by Greg Gagne. And while I'd love to say that Greg is full of crap and just trying to put a guy over, these were really good drop kicks. So this got my attention immediately. He goes for a monkey flip in the corner, and that fails. He just kind of falls on the back of his head. And on a corner whip, he goes up to the top rope and hits what I can only describe as a corkscrew sunset flip. It was a beautiful maneuver, and he gets the three count that way. So brute force in what I guess is their first match together picks up the victory. And wow, Ricky Rice, look at you. I know I kind of sound like the annoying version of Howard Stern from these days. My friend Adam from Warwick, who passed away 5 years ago, he always used to complain to me about the Stern show, where, you know, why does Howard always have to say, wow, look at you? And why does Howard always say human instead of human? And then why does Howard start sentences with listen? I don't know. These are questions, unfortunately, I was not able to answer for him before he passed away. But I have to say, kind of impressed with brute force. So maybe if, God forbid, I ever do a 1990 AWA show again, maybe I'll actually look through it and see, hey, if there's a brute force match, maybe there'll be something decent here.
Second and five for Brady. This time he is protected, and it's intercepted. Complete miscommunication as Edelman stopped. And Sean Smith is setting up blocks. 25, 20, 15. Almost lost it. Down to the 13. A disaster for the Patriots here tonight.
I was at that game in Kansas City, getting on a cheap Southwest flight from Boston to MCI. And they broke the record for the loudest crowd. There was some weird contest between them and Seattle back and forth. There's like 142 decibels, something. And I was on the lower level, so it really was loud because you have all the noise from above kind of descending down on you. It's a very well-designed stadium. I don't regret going to that game, even though the Patriots got humiliated and I got yelled at in the parking lot by some Chiefs fans, who, for which my retort was, I wish them nothing but luck in the playoffs, which was a nice play on words, except nobody freaking got it because Andrew Luck had come back from like 25 points down against the Chiefs in the playoffs the year before. Anyway, I'm doing forever trying to do stuff to just amuse me in my own head. So the Patriots got blown out, whatever, it happens. But the next day on the Southwest flight back to Boston, you know, everybody's at the gate, and this is the media flight as well, because Southwest is one of the few airlines that actually has a direct Kansas City-Boston flight nonstop. So a lot of the media people like Mike Reese of ESPN and a lot of the TV reporters are on this flight, including Steve Burton of WBZ in Boston. And I may have told this story on the podcast before, but Steve Burton is there holding court with anybody. Here is this 6'5" African-American man who clearly stands out amongst like all these like fatsos, including me. I mean, I'm just kind of leaving everybody alone. And he just like gets up in the middle of the gate and announces, "Don't worry, everybody. It wasn't as bad as it looked." And then several months later, the Patriots ended up winning the Super Bowl. So all I could say with my friend Merrill later was, Steve Burton was right. So I think the lesson here is, if your team gets blown out in a situation, especially on the road in a hostile environment, don't worry too much about it. It's one game. It only counts as one game in the standings. So we're back with Uncle Eric Bischoff again, and he is with proven Super Show main eventer, Sheik Adnan LKC, who is throwing me the hell off here because he doesn't have any facial hair whatsoever. Now, how are you going to serve as an acceptable double to Saddam Hussein if you're not going to have facial hair? And the other question, where the hell is Coquina Maximus? We need some answers here, Sheik.
Well, the big man, he will be here very soon. I will guarantee you, and I always guarantee that he will be in the arena very soon. But maybe he's not going to be here. But I don't know what I'm going to do. But I was going to see he'll be here. Got 2 hours, 40 minutes.
Wait a minute, I'm asking you. First you say you guarantee he's going to be here. Then you're saying, but maybe he's not. Which is it?
Well, what can I say if the weather is bad and there is a sandstorm all over the country? What can I do? But I was going to see that he's going to be here. And I'm sure he's going to be here. And that is guaranteed from me.
I'm not taking any guarantees from Adnan if he doesn't have facial hair. And even if he did, I'd still be a little wary. This is like a metaphor for this entire show. Yes, I guarantee that he's going to be here. Maybe he's going to be here. There have been storms across the country. Like, might be a metaphor for like the entire fall of the AWA. But Sheik Adnan El-Kaissi saying, what can I do? What do you want me to do? What can I say? It's kind of like the AWA locker room motto for anybody who was working there at the time. Like, what do you want me to do, really?
And if you don't want to wait and dial the phone, well, we've got the team challenge update for you right now. Let's go to Lee Marshall.
Thanks, Ralph and Greg. Last week in the Team Challenge Series, Baron Von Raschke helped his team regain the lead over Larry's Legends. The Destruction Crew double-teamed the Baron during an amateur rules Greco-Roman match.
Lee Marshall giving us the update on the Team Challenge Series. It's great, especially when you got a Greco-Roman match involving Baron Von Raschke. As the 90s dawned, that is exactly what America was calling for. More Greco-Roman matches involving dudes who were like 55 years old and were working a former reformed Nazi gimmick or whatever the hell it is. Now, I defended the Team Challenge Series earlier because there is a specific set of circumstances in which I think this could have worked. Such a situation did not exist in the AWA at that point, or probably any other point in its history, since they never really did like factions other than the generic heel manager has his family or stable or whatever. In defense of 10-year-old me, I was thinking about it more as a general concept like a hockey league, basketball league, or whatever, where you compete against each other rather than trying to do a wrestling promotion out of it. But the thing that ruins it for me, just from this one episode, is they put the standings on the TV. I like how Team Challenge Series is trademarked. They get the little TM there, as if anybody is ever going to take that name ever again after this debacle. And they helpfully have standings here, which include points. Not exactly sure what the point system is, but Baron's Blitzers are 7-3 with two draws, and then there's a number 2 under disqualifications. I don't know if that means that they were DQ'd twice or if they won by disqualification twice. Who knows, really? Looking at it, it seems like maybe it was disqualification wins. I can't quite discern. It looks like 2 points for a win, 1 point for a draw. And the DQ thing is just completely meaningless. But in adding up the three teams, Baron's Blitzers, Larry's Legends, and Sarge's Snipers, by the way, if you want to leave your Nazi gimmick in the past, calling your name Baron's Blitzers, maybe not the best way to do that. But if you add up the win column and you add up the loss column, they should, in theory, equal each other, unless you're doing three-way matches, and that was not happening in the AWA in 1989 and 1990. Here, the three teams combined for 19 wins, 16 losses, 4 draws, so there are actually 2 draws that, you know, between the teams, and 2 DQs. So this doesn't make any sense. How are there more wins than losses? What the hell is this? The freaking NHL where, yeah, the team lost in overtime or the shootout, but it doesn't count as a real loss and we give you a point? I don't understand what the hell is going on here. And to think, I'm one of the dummies who might have been inclined to support something like this if a little bit of thought had been put into it.
This week, Larry's Legends will try to get back on the winning track. Coquina Maximus goes in for the Legends against the wild card entrant, Yukon John, in a body slam match.
Well, if Tony the Tiger says that the body slam match is back on, I'm going to take his word for it. But we get a promo for next week in honor of the Super Bowl, they said, which I thought was interesting. January 1990 featured the absolute worst Super Bowl of all time when San Francisco defeated Denver 55-10. A game where the 49ers scored 2 touchdowns in every quarter of the game. Of course, the kicker missed an extra point somewhere along the line. But that's not important. It just meant they won by 45 instead of 46. So in honor of the Super Bowl, what are they going to put out there?
In honor of the Super Bowl, we've got a football clash featuring the All-American football player, the Trooper from South Carolina, against Mean Mike Enos. And the special referee, your buddy and mine, bench warmer Bob Lursima, former Seattle Seahawk, New York Giant, and Minnesota Vikings.
Should be a great one.
I don't know how great that would be, but it is interesting to me, of course. The Trooper is Del Wilkes, who would later go on to become the Patriot in Global and in the World Wrestling Federation in 1997, being particularly memorable. And we all know that the Patriots play very good Super Bowls, except for the one this year, which I'll grant you, being 13-3, a defensive struggle, all that. But generally, the Patriots play good Super Bowls, so it's good to have a guy who would go on to become the Patriot in the Super Bowl. And he's taking on Mike Enos, who I don't know exactly what he represents here. Once again, the Forrest Gump of professional wrestling. Now, this benchwarmer Bob Lertesma guy who had played in the NFL, he's kind of a local favorite in Minneapolis. And the storyline that they went with him was the complete opposite of the Danny Davis thing, where they made him a biased referee towards the babyfaces. A refreshing change in the AWA, which would generally look to screw over any babyfaces who would win anything of note. But Mike Enos here, and I'm always happy when they allow him to show some personality, like in that ridiculous Battle of the Breakfast Cereals thing that appeared on the WWE Network recently. He gets to say a few words now, but Lertesma crashes onto the scene and makes some very peculiar remarks.
I'm gonna finally get my say! Lertesma, I'm a wrestler, not no sissy football player, and I'm not gonna wear pads, let alone a helmet!
I'll handle this, Mike. And don't tell me what you're going to wear, all right? I'm the referee. I'm making the rules. Now, Sabisco, your team captain is a real jerk. And
don't tell me my captain.
I'll handle this, okay? I've heard things. You're a nice man. Don't act like him, all right? Because next Saturday, I'll be in there. I'll make the rules. It's one-on-one. You're taking on the trooper. Now, I think the trooper can rip your fanny.
What are you talking?
I'll handle this. I'll handle this.
Now, he keeps saying something like, I'll handle this. I'll handle this. And it is a different spin on the biased referee angle. I don't know if psychologically it can actually work, because you probably want to heat up the crowd to be mad at that referee rather than just be screwing over your heels. Although, you do owe the audience a little bit of goodwill after what you've done to them, especially if they're willing to go to the arena and actually watch the AWA at this point in time. But he kind of goes off the rails the further this goes along.
But the rules are such as the football rules. There's going to be contact. That's why you wear the pads.
Well, we have contact.
I'll handle this anyway. They're going one-on-one. The football, if they bring the football or the opponent, they can actually drive them into the net area.
Wait,
a point.
Drive me into what?
I'll handle this. Don't worry about it. All right? Yeah, they'll drive you, all right? Also, if you're thrown out of the ring, you're penalized a point. You violate any of the rules that I have.
Out of the ring? Have you ever been thrown out of the ring?
I'll handle this, all right? You got a little bit of Zabisco in there. Get out of here. I used to like you. Get out of here, Mike. Good luck, trooper. Remember, the rules are such. Yes, you are. If they violate the rules, they can be penalized. It's 5 total points. A physical battle you cannot believe. It's football rules, and that's a lot tougher than a cheap sport wrestling, big bad mean Mike.
Well, gee, Bob, thanks for taking part in our wrestling event and concluding your interview by completely shitting on wrestling vis-a-vis football. But okay, however you want to do things, I'll let you handle it, as you kept saying over and over again. One more promo for Coquina Maximus versus Yukon John Nord, and I'm once again very excited for this match to potentially happen. And another plug for the hotline, the same one that I played earlier, with the AWA star to be Bo Jackson. I don't know what that is. I don't particularly care either. And also the the mixed tag match that they were referring to, that they referenced, was Baron Von Raschke and Candy Devine versus Colonel De Beers and Magnificent Mimi. Now, I don't know who the hell you're supposed to root for in a match between Colonel De Beers and Baron Von Raschke. I mean, do I root for apartheid, or do I root for Nazism?
Delman, line drive, left field, heading for the corner. It's a base hit. It goes right past Martinez. One run is in. Two runs are in. Here's Hardy. Here's the relay. The tag. Safe at the plate. Delman Young, a double with the bases loaded. He drives in three. And the Orioles have gone ahead in the eighth inning.
Sad as it may seem, given that the ballpark is now 26, 27 years old. That is probably the greatest moment in the history of Oriole Park at Camden Yards, outside of Cal Ripken in his streak 21-31 back in the mid-90s. I mean, think about that. It's a long time. But that 2014 Orioles team, which won the American League East, and by the way, that means they've won the American League East more recently than the New York Yankees. I feel like that should be noted. Delmon Young's three-run double off the Tigers bullpen, who were a real problem in that ALDS. So the Orioles ended up defeating three pitchers for the Tigers, who all won Cy Young Awards. Max Scherzer, David Price, and Justin Verlander. Of course, it was not really any of their fault in any of the games except for Game 3, which was a 2-1 ball game. That 2014 Orioles team was so much fun. It was the first year that I got a Sirius Radio, which made it a lot easier to follow that team because I could listen to the games, and now I listen religiously to pretty much every game, at least that I can. And I've said it before, if you live in a city with four sports teams, it's good to follow a team that isn't in that city just to kind of, you know, give yourself a breather from everything going on, especially here in Boston where everything is just suffocating. Sometimes I don't even consume sports radio at this point. It's just not worth it. But yeah, kudos to that 2014 Orioles team. Like I said with Nelson Cruz, he was on that team. Miss him dearly. And then after that season, they decided to not re-sign him, not re-sign Nick Markakis, not re-sign Andrew Miller, and pretty much all of that backfired. They did make the wild card game in 2016, but it's been mostly negative since then. But in spite of all of that, the Orioles have won the American League East more recently than the New York Yankees. And something else that'll brighten my spirits, other than repeating that over and over again, that the Orioles have won the American League East more recently than the New York Yankees, is Masa Saito is here, my man. He is here to take on Bad Boy Brown in our next contest. What I've always wanted from Saito, him as a charismatic babyface.
People sitting at home are probably wondering, why are the fans cheering Mr. Saito? Well, it was just a couple weeks back when he stepped in the ring on ESPN with Larry Zbyszko. He was under a mask. He was the unknown soldier. He took the mask off, and in front of Larry Zbyszko stood Master Saito. I told you, Ralph, he was here for one thing, the world title.
Boy, they really liked using that unknown soldier thing with multiple people. I'm surprised Jack Victory didn't make an appearance under the mask at some point, although he was probably exclusively under contract to the NWA, WCW. He's incredibly valuable playing nine different masked guys in 1989 WCW. Saito actually does win the AWA world title on February 10th, ending Larry Zbyszko's reign at, I believe, 368 days. And he seems like an odd choice to bring in, given the fact that he is 47, 48 years old at this point. But consider, who's willing to make the jump to the AWA at this point in time, and who is also credible enough to wrestle at that level against somebody like Larry Zbyszko, and somebody who wouldn't necessarily be a problem? Because the first name that would come to mind for me would be any of the Von Erichs, but they're not going to come up to Minneapolis, especially Kevin, who didn't like to travel. And then you get a guy like Kerry, and we saw what happened when you put the Intercontinental title on him, where he just had a lot of baggage. One thing about Saito, well, one thing they actually had in common for a long time with Kevin Von Erich, is he did not wear boots, but he is wearing boots now, showing that he did not exactly trust the AWA's sanitation of their rings. And he's doing more or less the same stuff. I jokingly called him a charismatic baby face. It's funny to think of him kissing babies and all that, but he's doing the same stuff he always did, dumping guys on their head and just doing heelish things like throwing Bad Boy Brown through the ropes to the floor. No pads out there, because Vern liked to run a Bill Watts-style territory. And we get a confirmation on commentary that Coquina Maximus is not here. Now, I hope that they are just fooling around and toying with my emotions once again, because I've been promised this match, this slam match between Coquina Maximus and Yukon John Nord, that I have to see it now. Saito once again delights me with the back suplex. Just dump the guy on his head. Let All Japan know that you're ready to come back and do the same thing there. And he finishes Brown off with the what is called the Scorpion Hold, but it is basically the Scorpion Deathlock. I don't know why several episodes ago I was so amazed that he actually used that move. I mean, it's not like Bret Hart invented it, and I've talked about that many times. But the thing that had me wondering what the hell is going on here is it took Bad Boy Brown 15 seconds to submit to this dude's Scorpion Deathlock. I mean, what the hell? Give up right away. I mean, I don't understand why he was trying to fight it or put up a fight. I mean, you're an enhancement talent in the AWA in 1990. Just quietly go down to defeat. And it's funny, the storyline here, AWA doesn't have a lot of good angles, but the notion that Larry brought Saito over to be on his team for the Team Challenge Series, and now Saito is going to in turn challenge him for the world title, a little bit of shades of Batista that challenging Triple H for the World Heavyweight Championship in 2005. I mean, God knows, mid-2000s WWF was just ripping off late-stage AWA at every turn.
Now stay tuned, because after this break, we've got UConn John Nord in a body slam match against what we think is going to be Coquina Maximus. We'll find out for sure right after this break. Don't go away. I'm sorry. You know, we were talking during the break, and this is really a startling development, because Coquina Maximus may not be in the ring for this big slam match with UConn John Nord.
Maybe he's backpedaling a little bit. Maybe they're both him and the Sheik are leery of UConn John, because the Sheik knows how UConn John feels about him. But we'll have to see what legal counsel Bob Ryan says about this. We will have a slam contest.
Look, at this point, I don't even care if it's a slam match. It might as well be a slam poetry match. And I think I would enjoy John Nord reading slam poetry. I think that that would be a lot of fun. Probably more entertaining than a lot of AWA television around this time. I mean, if he doesn't show up, if Coquina isn't there, you need a suitable substitute, a rough equivalent to what he would have brought to the table. So what do we get?
Ladies and gentlemen, here is your matchup. Introducing first, weighing in at 255 pounds.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. This is a rat. I just saw Donna on the headset here before she got into the ring. She's writing something down, and look what she's writing down. It's the Sheik instead of Coquina Maximus.
You know, I've been getting my hopes up all this time. It's like watching an overtime hockey game in the playoffs. You're hoping against hope that your team will come through and score, but at the same time, you're bracing yourself for the worst, which I advise you to always do when watching late-stage AWA television. Sheik Adnan El-Casey is going to fill in, weighing in at 255 pounds, because, you know, that's a rough equivalent. That's what you want to have, a body slam match. A guy who weighs, like, the same as Greg the Hammer Valentine, or something like that. Just absolutely crazy. Although, I did say, if you get a rough equivalent substitute, and when you think of Sheik Adnan El-Casey and Coquina Maximus, what do they have in common? Well, both of them main evented SummerSlams in the early 90s. Granted, it's after this point, so retroactively, you can justify it. So this is our match. Larry Z is at ringside with the Sheik, along, and he's taking on UConn John Nord, who John Nord is a bit of a flaky guy too, but at least he showed up for the match. And in the lumberjack gimmick, which was done in WCW with Big Josh, I feel like John Nord is a little bit more natural in this. I feel like it would have been great if he could have sung to maybe provide a little bit more entertainment on this program.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. I sleep all night and I work all day.
He's a lumberjack and he's okay. He sleeps all night and he works all day.
I cut down trees, I eat my lunch, I go to the lavatory.
See, that's not too bad. I think John Nord would fit in as a Monty Python type character. So we have some obvious controversy here, and Larry is kind of flipping out at ringside on Bob Ryan, not the Boston Globe sports writer who you would see on basically every ESPN show where a sports writer was needed as a panelist. Bob Ryan has been there at some point or another. This is the legal guy that the AWA would bring in. We saw him in the 1989 episode when they were awarding the world title in that battle royal. And he very much reminds me of Skippy from Family Ties, the great Mark Price, not the Mark Price who played for the Cleveland Cavaliers, but the actor. So Larry, for whatever reason, his whole shtick is kind of funny to see, where he's kind of out of control. And for once in his life, Larry Z gets right to the point and lets Bob Ryan know exactly how he feels.
Sheik Adnan LKC will go in the ring. And
all right, that's it.
Hey, you only won it. You suck.
That's it. Sheik Adnan LKC taking the place of Coquina Maximus.
They did strain to try and explain why Adnan would be put into the match, saying that his name was also on the contract as the manager of Coquina Maximus, so thus it becomes his obligation with Coquina not there. The Baron is also there, Baron von Raschke. He's wearing a shirt of a realty company, which I thought was rather strange. For a second, I was hoping it was going to be one of those red Pro Wrestling Illustrated shirts that dudes liked to wear back in the day, probably because they were free. Now, Nord, I said, you know, sometimes he could be a bit of a goofball and a bit flaky. He looks very much here. He doesn't look like he does when he's the Berserker. Here, he looks like a taller version of Seth Rogen mixed with Dietrich Bader's character from Office Space, you know, Lawrence, the neighbor of Peter Gibbons. So they show two signs in the crowd in typical AWA fashion. It's white poster board, but you can't actually read what it says. Who knows? It might be the video quality. And we get some stalling to start. And all I can think is, with Adnan in this match, I better see some high-quality back rakes, because nobody could do a back rake in the history of pro wrestling like Sheik Adnan LKC.
There's an old Arabian proverb that revenge is a dish best served cold. And I think the Sheik would be looking for a microwave after this one.
Given that Adnan is the guy in this match, I understand why Ralph referred to it as an old Arabian proverb, although the phrase revenge is a dish best served cold has its origins in France in the 19th century, with the actual meaning being by served cold. What they mean by that is you're taking the person that you're getting revenge on by surprise, so you let things cool down. Like, if something happens, you don't just come back at them right away. You let it cool down over a period of time, and the dish is served cold when you get your revenge at some point later in the future. At this point, watching the video, I just, you know, made another note to myself. Screen your shows a little bit better. Because I legitimately chose this thinking I was going to see Yokozuna. Just sight unseen. I should have just, you know, actually gone through it first. And the Sheik has a weak-ass side headlock on and Yukon John Nord. A shoulder block by Nord as the Sheik bails to the outside. And it made me think about strategy you might employ in a body slam match, especially when you're only weighing in at 255 pounds, which is a pretty, you know, easy body slam for, you know, in a traditional wrestling match. And I think that the only strategy you could do is Antonio Inoki's strategy against Muhammad Ali. Just crab walk around the ring. How can they slam you at that point? And an eye rake by the Sheik. He regains control, and we get a nice back rake, and I'm very excited that we get the back rake from Sheik Adnan LKC. That added easily 2 stars to this match. I called it mess by accident. Freudian slip, if there ever was one, raises the bar on this match from -4 stars to -2. Big boot by John Nord, who, by the way, not wearing the furry boots that you would see him in for much of the 1990s. And the other thing that I have to note is I made fun of the AWA in previous shows for having empty seats in the front row. Here, they actually have all their seats opposite hard camera, at least in the very front, occupied in some way. Sheik goes for a slam, but no, and he ends up running over to the ropes before Nord can get him up. Sheik then works the arm very unconvincingly, some 1980s style arm work, which, you know, granted, now that we're in 1990, isn't going to work quite so well. I love the idea of the wrist locks in a body slam match. Like, oh, are you actually trying to work something to make it easier to pick the guy up? At least Andre was kicking Big John Studd in the legs in the WrestleMania 1 thing, so it made sense of like, okay, he won't be able to run away from me so that I can then pick him up and slam him at some point. So, I mean, this makes Andre Studd at 1 look like Savage Steamboat at 3. But we get more back rakes from Adnan, which brings it up to negative one star. And I'm wondering, like, the Adnan back rake, did he just, like, not cut his nails? Is this some sort of plaintive strategy? I've never actually looked at Adnan's hands, either as Sheik Adnan LKC or General Adnan. And Nord actually hulks up off an eye rake. Like, take that, Hulk Hogan. You've never done that. And Adnan actually bails a la the Genius in his strategy from the Saturday night's main event, which is actually not that long before this when the Genius just runs during the Hulk up and ends up winning by countout. Larry ends up taking a spill on the outside when Nord runs over him, and he kind of gets caught in the middle, and a power slam ends up finishing when they end up back in the ring. A power slam by Yukon John Nord finishes off Sheik Adnan LKC, and I guess this counts for something in the Team Challenge series, I guess. I don't know. Like I said, the standings didn't make any sense when I looked at them. I like John Nord. I really do. But, you know, this wasn't exactly him at his best. But yet, he's still one of the better guys in the promotion at this time. So Eric Bischoff is ringside with Nord and Baron Von Raschke. And I have to admit, listening to Nord, he sounds kind of like 1980s Hacksaw Jim Duggan, just vocally, which is odd because Duggan's not from Minnesota.
And it felt great. Let me tell you, I couldn't have picked a better man than the Baron. But I tell you what, me and Bertha's job ain't done here in the AWA. You got a lot of tough guys, a lot of wise guys going around thinking they're tough, thinking they're real tough. But I got the man that I can count on. Loyalty. Loyalty. And we're going to stick together. Ain't that right, Daddy Baron?
I know you got one thing to say. Oh!
Having sat through this entire program yelling, ow, almost feels kind of appropriate, but I'm glad that the Baron was there because I was actually finally able to make out what it says on his shirt. It said, Adina Realty, which, I don't know, it's just kind of a big real estate company in Rochester, Minnesota that still exists to this day. In fact, the Baron used to own this place that was built to in the form of a wigwam, and I guess it was a gift shop of some kind. He sold it many years ago, back in summer of 2001, but kind of interesting that he would own one of those places. But oddly, for the first time on this video, it goes to commercial, and I actually get to see the ad, which is a public service announcement.
There's a lot of tough things out in the streets today.
I've been around and tried everything.
There's a new drug called crack out there.
Been on my own for over a year now. Sure, it's lonely sometimes.
Crack's made from cocaine, but it's more addicting than cocaine.
Nobody's life's perfect. I try not to think about serious kind of things.
Some girls who get hooked on crack will walk a long way to get it.
One thing I really don't know about is tomorrow.
So the early part of that ad was that woman whose voice you heard putting on makeup for A Night on the Town. And as you're if you're listening to just the audio of it, it actually sounds like a pro-crack commercial for the first three quarters of it. And that's like, oh yeah, that's right. This woman is selling her body to feed her addiction to this drug that, for whatever reason, is treated worse than cocaine in sentencing guidelines. Cough, cough, racism. So I don't know. That was kind of an odd anti-drug PSA that came off as almost pro-drug at times. Like, oh, it's more addictive. Oh, it's delicious. Whatever. So we're not going to get Cocaina Maximus on this show, I'm afraid, which means that Sheik Adnan LKC will get the last word. And he said that he was not ready, and to which I would say, yeah, neither was I. I was prepared for Cocaina Maximus versus Yukon John Nord in a body slam match, as I was told 15 times was going to happen. And he vows revenge, going to put a bounty on the head of Yukon John Nord. Nice old trope, but also very timely because Ralph makes a reference to the Buddy Ryan bounty that he put on the head of the Dallas Cowboys kicker in the 1989 season, which led to the bounty ball, basically just run over the guy, you'll get some sort of payment from the team. Now, of course, that type of thing got the New Orleans Saints in trouble years later. I'm sure that Steve Bennett of the Sportscasters, big New Orleans Saints fan, would have more than a few things to say about the way that went down, considering that the NFL kind of botched that investigation. And they tell us what is going to be on next week's AWA show, but I don't give a rat's ass what's going to be on there. And besides, I don't believe them, because I was promised Coquina Maximus versus Yukon John Nord in a body slam match, and they did not deliver. But the best part of this video is, and sometimes this happens with wrestling videos where something random will pop up at the end, and in the final 2 seconds of this video, Angela Lansbury just pops up on screen there, and I was like, this is so appropriate. Murder the territory, she wrote. So I think I should go out on that note. That is a wrap for AWA All-Star Wrestling for January 6, 1990.
It's snapped over the head of Peyton Manning. A flag is down, and the ball's out of the back of the end zone. It's a safety to start this game as Manning wasn't right.
Remember that thing I said about the Patriots being in entertaining Super Bowls, except for the one this year against the Rams? Conversely, on the other side, the Denver Broncos tend to play Super Bowls that are not so exciting, like that one against Seattle that was played at MetLife Stadium, home of WrestleMania 35, this past April, and it ends up 43-8. They lost the Super Bowl 55-10, as I mentioned. Also 39-20. They beat Carolina 23-10, I think it was, but that game was never in question. And the other game against Atlanta, I guess the one that they played that was exciting was the Elway finally winning his first one against Green Bay. But come on, I mean, we all know that it's better if the Patriots are in the Super Bowl, and you know that in your heart. It's just hilarious the way the first snap of the game went past Peyton Manning and out of the end zone. Although those bettors who picked the first points of the game to be a safety were happy in that one. And actually, that also occurred in Super Bowl 46 as well. The first points of the game were Patriots allowed a safety to the Giants. So, elsewhere in podcast land, you heard the voice of Joe Buck, who has been a guest on a couple of occasions on the Sportscasters with Steve Bennett. And I've been saying that it is coming back, and that thing has been marinating for quite some time. But as I understand it, I believe the episode is out now. I have to check my podcatcher to make sure that that is the case. I believe I heard from Steve that it is coming out on the Wednesday. So that would be yesterday, if you're listening to the day, to this show, the day it is released, which I hope that you are. Although I'd like to think that this show is fairly evergreen, unless you're keeping up on the weird details of my life, such as making a pork shoulder. On the Our Vantage Point podcast, they continue their Royal Ranking series of the top 10 WrestleManias, giving quite a bit of love to WrestleMania 30, because even though it is a retro wrestling podcast, I mean, it is in the name, WrestleMania 30, despite being in 2017, to me, is among the top 7 WrestleManias. I say that as somebody who hasn't necessarily seen all of them. Like, I've never watched 27 through 29. I mean, I've seen parts of 28, but I don't think I've watched 1 second of 27. I really don't feel like I'm missing anything. And on the wrestling podcast About Nothing with Ring of Honor's Brawler Malonis and Mike Crockett, they are taking a look at an old big-time wrestling show from Detroit from 1978. And it just so happens that I think the Our Vantage Point podcast may have covered that show about 3 months ago, I want to say. There's very limited Detroit footage out there, and WPAN is trying to go around to the various territories and just kind of look at one show from each of them, so there's probably not a lot to choose from. I remember listening to a show on Detroit that OVP did while I was skating in my backyard. This was during the period where I had the nice little ice rink that was kind of formed organically. So anyway, there's no YouTube theater this week because, hilariously enough, when I go to this video, there's fewer than 1,000 views for it. And it's no surprise because, you know, some people probably actually screen this stuff to actually see. 841 views as I'm looking at it. And there is one comment from Juventus Hoove, and it just says, Paul Drake. Now, I don't know what that means. I looked up Paul Drake. No idea. It's the name of a fictional character, and it's the name of a real guy. I don't know what they're saying. So, anyway, that's pretty much it for me. Now, as for next week's show, I had a couple of different options. I am going to return to do a WWF show, also as part of my Beertreon series. I guess this would be the second or third show in that. And I had owed a show to Richard Land, who has been setting Twitter ablaze, as I said earlier, with some of these clips that he has unearthed. And since he bought me a beer at Madison Square Garden that probably cost quite a bit of money because it is New York City and all, and it's also beer in a stadium or arena, I said, Richard, you could choose any show for me to do. So he was looking for a show that I've never done before, a type of WWF show, and he found one in The Superstars of Wrestling, and not the one that you know with Vince and Jesse. We're talking the D Show from 1984 through 1986, and he picked out one from, I believe it's May 31st of 1986, and there's some very interesting things on that show. The first WWF match of Harley Race from Maple Leaf Gardens against Specialty Delivery Jones, and the wild and crazy appearance of Paul Christie on TNT, which was at a point where Mean Gene Okerlund was hosting the show as Vince had just kind of given up on that. So that is coming next Thursday, episode 115 of Greetings from Allentown. And I ask that you leave a 5-star review on iTunes, Apple Music. I don't know what my podcast ranking is. Apparently OVP has been shooting up the charts both in the United States and the Ukraine. I don't really know any of the metrics of my own show because I'm not entirely sure where to go on the Apple Podcast Analytics. And besides, I don't believe any of the numbers that I see anyway. It's kind of mostly based on feedback, and I enjoy mixing it up with anybody on Twitter or Facebook because I do make posts for each show, and I know on Twitter I reply with stuff that has to do with the show to add context or things that I might have left out or to issue any sort of correction. So I thank you so much for spreading the word on Greetings from Allentown. Once again, I'm going to plug on the Place Be Nation pop feed. Earlier this week on Tuesday night came out with about an hour-long tribute to the TV show Veep. That I'm so glad that I did that. JT Rosero, he pulled it all together and just kind of a tribute to all the great characters on that show. I could have just sat there and quoted lines from that show for 2 hours rather than just talking about it, because that's what I love most about it. But anyway, I'm not here to talk about it. Go check that out, as I said, on the Place to Be Nation pop feed. Or pop feed, as Chad Campbell says. So do tune in next Thursday for another exciting episode of Greetings from Allentown.